You are listening to the Reality Steve podcast with your host, Reality Steve. He's got all the latest info and behind-the-scenes juice on Ari's upcoming season of The Bachelor and interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. Now, here's Reality Steve.
Welcome, everyone, to podcast number 56. I am your host, Reality Steve. Thank you all for tuning in, and if you can, please rate, subscribe, and review in Apple Podcasts. It certainly helps the podcast and helps all of our advertisers as well. And we have only one for you this week, so you don't have to worry about getting bogged down by ads on this particular podcast. But for the first time since I've started these podcasts, I'm delving into the Survivor world. Anyone that's followed me for the long period of time knows that I am a huge fan of Survivor. In fact, it's my favorite reality show on television, probably always will be. And in the year and 1 week that I've been doing podcasts, I've yet to have a Survivor contestant on. And I thought, why not invite one of my friends on? Somebody that I have become friends with over the years, have hung out with a couple times that I've been in New York. So maybe we'll start hitting up some Survivor podcasts. Survivor people, I know that a lot of you have asked, where are all the Bachelor people? All I'm doing is trying to branch out and hit some other shows. The Challenge, Survivor, some other shows that interest me, and got some guests lined up on those shows. But we're not done interviewing Bachelor people. We're certainly going to have more Bachelor contestants on in the future. But on a week-by-week basis, I can't lay out for you who's coming up and when they're coming up and whatnot, but just know that we are branching out and we are going to hit other reality shows, and that's the way it's going to go. But are we done interviewing Bachelor people? Absolutely not. We definitely will have some of those in the future. Let's get to our guest. You first saw her on Survivor Vanuatu and then later again on Survivor Micronesia, which was also known as Fans versus Favorites. That was the Well, I'll ask her in a second. At the time she was cast on Vanuatu, she was the youngest person ever to appear on Survivor. She was 21 at the time, I believe. Now you can see her making frequent appearances on the Survivor fan forum on People TV, doing episode recaps right after the show ends on Wednesday nights with different former contestants. It's Eliza Orlins. Eliza, how are you?
Hey, Steve. Great to talk to you. I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. Was I right on the age? You were 21 when you first showed up on the show?
I was back in my day. You had to be 21 to apply. And so I applied. The application deadline was like less than 1 month after my 21st birthday. So I applied immediately upon eligibility and went through casting, was cast the first time I applied. So I was 21 on the show.
And you were attending Syracuse at the time.
I was.
And it filmed in the summer between junior and senior year.
That's right. Okay. And then it aired the fall of my senior year, which made for really fun Thursday nights.
I could imagine. That must have been like, they must have been freaking out. Your sorority sisters and your roommates and all that, I'm guessing, was literally mandatory viewing parties every Thursday night back then.
Absolutely. And then the local news, because I was like in Syracuse at the time, so they thought of me as like a hometown contestant. The local news used to show up at my sorority house post-viewing party and interview my sorority sisters on the local news. Like, how do you think Eliza did tonight? Everybody was saying bad things about her. How did you feel? You know, and like, I had to pretend I wasn't there, because back then they like to keep up the illusion that we were like on the island in the moment. Whereas now, like, everybody posts on Instagram and nobody really seems to care about keeping up that illusion.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's just, it's so weird, because obviously you were a big fan of this show back in the day. And you had told yourself you were going to apply the second you turned 21, and you did. So how did you get into the show, and talk about your background there?
So I started watching it. That's the first summer that it was on, you know, Richard Hatch, everybody, it was like, they were the cover of People magazine. It was like this huge sensation, and everybody I knew was watching. I mean, I think they had like 50 million view that finale or something. And, but from episode one, I was obsessed. I was like, that, I'm going to be on that show. I was like, 100%, I'm going to do it. It was the physical challenge of it, the mental challenge, the, you know, social aspects of it. Everything about the game appealed to me. And, you know, I set my mind to it, and I was like, I'm going to be on that show. And even, do you remember, did you have AIM back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, me too. So my AOL Instant Messenger profile, I had calculated how many seasons it would be, two per year, you know, until I could apply. And I wrote on my AOL Instant Messenger profile, future Survivor 9 contestant. Wow. And people were like, and then finally, like, I got cast on season 9. I was like, oh my God, I better take it off. I like signed confidentiality agreements. But that's like how obsessed I was. I was like a huge fan. I used to schedule my college classes to make sure I didn't have any Thursday night classes because I watched Survivor with a group of people every week. And I competed in like Syracuse Survivor. We had like Survivor night in my like dorm when I was a freshman. And, you know, all of them were like floored and so excited when I actually got cast because we'd all been watching together.
I can imagine. I mean, that was, you had your AOL Instant Messenger set to survive future Survivor season 9 contestant.
I know.
And it ended up happening, right? That was
exactly.
Vanuatu was the 9th season. That is.
It sure was.
That is so crazy. I think people don't know your background. You and I have been friends for a few years, and it wasn't until I started actually like doing research on you. I think I've never really done research on you. You and I have talked Survivor when we've hung out a few times, but I've never really bothered to dig into your past and your history. But you've got a very interesting family dynamic. You've always been a very big traveler since I've known you. When you were 4, you and your family went to Beijing, where you adopted your sister. And then a year and a half after that, you had another sister that was born. Then your family moved to Hong Kong because of your dad's job. I want you to explain to everyone your upbringing from right around that time, 4 years old till you went to Syracuse. Like all the moving you did and why you did and all that stuff.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Manhattan. So I was, you know, born New York City girl through and through. Born in Manhattan. My dad has worked in China since way before I was born. He's, you know, big, he works in U.S.-China relations now, but he's done a bunch of different work in China. And so when I was, even when I was like a year and a half, my parents basically moved me over there and I was going to preschool in Beijing. And then we moved back to New York. And then my mom was like, let's adopt a child. And, you know, Chinese adoption now is like a pretty prevalent thing. But back in the mid 80s, it wasn't really set up at, you know, for U.S. adoption in China.
Yeah.
And thankfully they had a family friend who was a doctor who had a very young patient who was pregnant but wasn't going to be able to keep the child just, you know, due to financial constraints and she was unmarried, et cetera. And so my parents were like, well, we would love this baby. And so then mom and I flew over to meet dad and we adopted my sister. And my mom was like, it was crazy. I was walking out of the hospital with your sister and like all the paperwork was done. Like this was my kid, but this was like a 3-day old baby. And I was walking out and she was like, okay, I'm going to go now. This is my kid. I'm not stealing this baby. Cause she's like, it just felt so weird to walk out of the hospital with this little Chinese baby, but that's my sister, Sabrina.
Yeah.
And then my parents had my sister, Emily. We moved to Hong Kong, spent a couple years there where I attended elementary school. Then we moved back to New York City. And then, well, ultimately I went to high school in DC and then college upstate New York at Syracuse and then back to New York for law school at Fordham.
Yeah.
And then straight to the public defender's office here in Manhattan. And I am still working there today, 8 years later.
Is Sabrina, she's out there still or what? Sabrina is, where does she live basically?
She lives in Hamburg, Germany.
Okay. She lives in Germany. Okay.
Yes, with her husband,
okay.
Who's German. Yep.
Oh, okay. Now, you obviously, anyone that's followed you on social media, whether it be Twitter or Instagram, knows that you're quite the traveler to the point where you will go for months at a time and just travel different countries all over. Like you reach...
Whenever possible.
Yeah, whenever possible. Talk about your most recent one, which I believe lasted 6 months? Or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, no, I was traveling for a while. I took a sabbatical from work and, you know, I have this, being a public defender is a super intense job, high rates of burnout in my job. You know, people are just like every day giving notice to just quit and go do something else. Cause it's a tough job. And so in our contract, it enables us to take a leave of absence. And I saved up tons of vacation time, comp time, et cetera, from working nights, weekends, and we get a bunch of vacation time. And so then I ended up taking time off and just traveling the world. And it was amazing. It was rejuvenating, incredible. Now I'm back at work and it's brutal, but you know, lucky to have my job back.
How many, name all the places you went to on this last trip.
Oh my God, it's going to go on forever. Okay. So, let's see. So I started out in Germany. I went to visit my sister because she had just recently moved there, and we went to Oktoberfest, which if you haven't been is unbelievable. It's insane. It's so much fun. I was really not even expecting to like it as much as I did. But we dressed up, we wore dirndls and went to Oktoberfest, which was amazing.
Okay.
And then traveled through Germany. Like we, you know, I went to like all through Germany, had a great time, got to see a lot of the country because I had never been there before. And then after Germany, I went to Italy. And then Amsterdam, and then back to Germany, maybe. I can't remember exactly. The fall is like a little fuzzy. And then in the winter I was in Australia and New Zealand, which was incredible. Actually, Amy Cusack, who I was on both seasons of Survivor with, lives in New Zealand. She's in Waiheke, and she married a local Maori woman. And so I visited them, and Julie, Leanne, Mikey B, we all went down there. It was so much fun. It was a great time in New Zealand. And then after Australia, New Zealand, then I went to Asia. I was in the Philippines and Sri Lanka and China and Japan. And then after that, I ended up going back to Europe for the summer because my sister's wedding was in Copenhagen. So I was in Copenhagen. I was in Israel and Jordan, and then was in Spain, Italy, Denmark, Switzerland, Germany.
So I should have probably asked you what European countries didn't you
Portugal.
Visit?
Portugal. No, I know. This is why I was like, oh my God, you really want me to list everything? It's freaking crazy. Yes. So that's where I went.
So that
basically covers it, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say. So in the countries where you didn't have friend meetups, New Zealand, or where you were your sister, you kind of can go to these places you go by yourself, don't you? Or do always have somebody that you're meeting in a country?
No. I mean, plenty of times I go places completely alone. I have no idea even where I'm going to sleep that night.
That's crazy.
And I just show up in a place. I'm like, okay, I'll just figure it out. And then I always figure it out. I mean, I love to travel. I'm not a nervous traveler. Like, bad things definitely happen sometimes. And you kind of have to be prepared for that. If you're going to travel the world, like, yes, terrible things will happen, but you can't be like, oh, well, I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to sit in my apartment in New York. Cause like, as we talked about when we first got on the phone, there was a bombing in New York today. You know, it's like, you're not safe anywhere. So you may as well be experiencing the world and traveling and enjoying life and living every day like you could be blown up.
Yeah. I mean, I give props to you because I could never travel outside of the country alone. I just, it's not something that I would ever feel comfortable with. I don't have the balls to do it, basically, is what I'm saying. But
you should do it. You'd be fine.
I'd feel so like I don't know what to do. I'd just be like, where do I go? What do I do? I don't know anybody. I don't have anybody to talk to. Like, I just would feel, that's how I would feel. But I don't know. Maybe one of these days I'll have the balls to do it. But
start with something easy, like, you know,
well,
France or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, go to Paris. It's so easy, you know?
Isn't that more like a romance place where you kind of would want to go with somebody if you go to a place like Paris?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yeah. Actually, that's kind of true. But like anywhere you can enjoy on your own. Like Italy is supposed to be like this romantic place. I went completely alone. I went to Verona. I like went to the opera by myself. I like went to Treviso. I mean, I just like had the best time. Like, it's so easy to travel around by train. You can always figure stuff out.
Yeah. Maybe one of these days I'll do something like that. Okay, everyone, I want to talk to you about Birchbox. Support for today's show comes from Birchbox, a company that was created for women by women as a better way to shop for beauty. Birchbox is a beauty subscription service that delivers 5 samples ranging from hair care, skin care, makeup products to your door every month. Brands vary from well-known to indie. Each box is personalized based on the recipient's beauty profile. It's a great gift for any women in your life this holiday season because it's quick and easy. Yes, it always feels personalized. Plus, it keeps on giving even after the holidays have come and gone. It's a perfect as a last-minute gift as well. Simply download a beautifully designed certificate and give it to someone immediately, or treat yourself and opt for a monthly self-subscription. Gift subscriptions start at $30 for 3 months and are also available in 6 and 12 months period. I've got a Birchbox sent to me, and for a guy having essential needs, whether it be shaving or lotion, because my skin does get dry a lot and it bothers the heck out of me, I got my own Birchbox. It's been great so far. Definitely has, with the starting to get a little cooler here in Dallas, and cooling means my skin gets dry and I need some better moisturizer and some better lotion. So Birchbox has provided that for me. Gift today and save 20% on all gift subscriptions when you go to www.birchbox.com/Steve and use the code Steve. But hurry, this is a limited time offer only available through Christmas Day, December 25th. Just go to www.birchbox.com/Steve and use the code Steve. Now let's get back to Eliza uninterrupted for the remainder of the podcast. Let's talk about Survivor. Your first season that you were on was Vanuatu. And it's funny because I have seen every episode of every season that Survivor has ever aired. However, if you were to ask me who were the final two seasons ago, I'd probably forget. Like, I don't remember. And it's weird because I've seen every episode of Bachelor and Bachelorette, obviously, but that stuff, because I follow it daily and I'm on and I'm looking at stuff and I'm writing about it and I'm covering it, I know it so much more in depth. But Survivor has always been, and I've said this numerous times in my column, it's always been my favorite reality show. It'll always be my favorite reality show. But my knowledge of seasons and winners and what happened, like, I know that you're way better at that than me, so I need you to refresh my memory on a couple things. What I remember about Vanuatu was when it got down to about 6, it was 5 girls and Chris Doherty? Or was it 6 girls and Chris Doherty?
Yeah, exactly. It was 6 of us and Chris. It was at the final 7. It was the family visit episode.
Okay.
And 6 women and Chris, and we had an all female alliance, and that was the day that the girls, or that was the week, whatever. That was in those 3 days. That episode, the women decided to turn on me.
Why?
I don't remember what happened. It's so weird. It's, you know, when you even watching that episode, it's not like 100% clear what happens, except for that everybody feels very moved by Lori, Chris's then fiance, now wife, that, you know, she basically comes in and the family members participated in our immunity challenge.
Yeah.
And my mom and I did horribly. My mom was blindfolded, like, off in the woods. And I'm like, Mom, Mom, Mom. And she's, like, not listening to me. And I, like, can't get her to retrieve the puzzle pieces. And so we were, like, in dead last. But Chris and Lori came actually pretty close to winning. And then they didn't win. Amy and her girlfriend Chrissy won. And when Chris lost, he, like, started to cry. And he basically says to Lori, well, that's it. I'm getting voted off now. And the girls were like, oh my God, Lori's going to feel so terrible. Oh, she's so sweet. Oh, Chris deserves to be here. I mean, there's always this weird thing on Survivor about, like, who deserves to be in the finals or deserves to be in the game.
Yeah.
And there was some weird thing where they were like, well, Eliza doesn't really deserve to be here. I don't know what that was about. But then the women who I actually know, who are my dear, dear friends, Amy, Leanne, and Julie, were kind of, I don't know whether they were talked into it by Scout and Twyla or they were just all conversing about it, because that scene isn't shown. But and the girls have their varying perspectives on what actually took place. But basically, Chris, they decide to keep Chris and get rid of me. And Twyla and Scout realize that Amy, Leanne, and Julie are super close, and that they're better off going to the finals with Chris and with me than with those three. And they capitalize on this opportunity and they come to me and say, hey, those girls you think are your friends are about to vote you off tonight. This is our chance. We have to blindside them. And I was like, I don't know, guys. Like, I don't trust you guys. They were the people who were like such bullies to me throughout the game. They were these old women who were so mean to me, who hid food from me, who were horrible to me. And, you know, Chris and I weren't close at that point. And he was like, no, you can trust me. I really want to do this. Like, let's vote the four of us. We have to flip this game. And ultimately I was like, well, I got to save myself. Like, and if they're going to vote me off, fine. And Amy had immunity, as I mentioned. So then we decided to vote out Leanne, who was like her second in command. And we completely blindsided Leanne that night, and it flipped the game. You know, it ultimately didn't necessarily, I mean, I didn't go home at final seven. Yeah.
Yeah.
But could I have done something? And if I'd gone back to the girls and said, they're trying to get me to go for you guys, let's go for one of them. Could I have gone to the end with them instead and maybe done better than fourth place? Who knows? You know, you can relive this stuff for eternity.
Oh yeah.
But anyhow, that's what happened at final seven.
Was that one of the first seasons where Vanuatu was, you said, the ninth season? I'm trying to remember. I know roughly the first eight winners. I wouldn't know them in order, but if you told me their names, I'd be like, oh yeah, they won that. See, like Ethan and Tina and Richard Hatch and Brian Heidick and whatever. So, but was that the first season where we kind of had a winner that came out of nowhere? Because obviously Chris was seventh in a seven person, in a six girl alliance, and he was number seven, and yet he ended up winning. Was that one of the first ones where the winner was like, oh shit, this kind of came out of nowhere?
I think that the other seasons, like, I mean, even though nobody expected Hatch to like come out and actually win because Hatch was so hated, you know, and he was like this villain, still you could see that he was the one strategizing. He was the one, you know, probably like making things happen. Was it the first season where an unexpected winner?
Or just an under, I mean, he was literally an underdog. Richard Hatch was never an underdog because he was running that alliance. And obviously, I guess Tina was kind of an underdog and Colby made a mistake by bringing her instead of Keith and whatever. But it just seems like Chris was so far behind the eight ball with, you know, three or four episodes left that if you would have said, yeah, that guy's going to win, when there were seven people left, people would have been like, absolutely no fucking way. He's done. And I just...
Yeah.
He seems like a very surprising
winner. That's probably true. Okay. He was very surprised. He almost went home in the premiere. You know, like he couldn't get across that balance beam. He almost was the first person voted off of our season.
And he's a winner.
So the fact that he turned around to become the winner was like a total flip.
And then I remember in the final tribal council, you're obviously part of the jury and you get to vote and you're voting between Chris and Twyla. You didn't like either of them for the most part, but you voted. It was more of a lesser of two evils vote for Chris, right?
Yes. So, but also Chris, I thought, did a really good job with jury management. You know, I asked like a super bratty question. I mean, I was 21. Give me a little bit of a break. And I got up there and I was like, I gave like a speech. I like really like said, I was like, I don't know if you remember this. Like when people Google me though, they can like watch this. It's like one of the first things that come up on YouTube and people are like, oh my God, I watched your speech. I'm like, geez, this thing is going to haunt me forever. But I'm like, Twyla, I'm like, you know, I get up there and I'm like, Twyla, you were outright about it. You came here, what you said you were going to do. You were going to make the final two at all costs. And you did that. And like, you said you were going to be a deceptive, lying bitch and that you were and blah, blah, blah. And I like go off on her. And then I turn to Chris and I'm like, but Chris, like you shocked me. I'm like, unnecessary. Like you, like, you know, you voted off Julie and then you turned around and told me you were with me and then you voted me off and it was salt in the wound. And I was like, I didn't know that you were a deceptive lying bitch too. And like, everyone's like, oh, like, you know, the jury cracking up. And I'm like, I can't. And then after I said all that to them, but you know what? They're trying to get my vote for $1 million. So ultimately like whatever.
Yeah.
But after all that, I say to them, I'm like, now I want you both to apologize me for the ways that you wronged me this game. And
Chris apologized, you know, and Twyla didn't, right?
Twyla was like, well, you're a spoiled rotten little child. If you think I'm a bitch, then you're fucking brat. And I was like, is this an apology? Are you kidding me? And she just was like, she just tanked it at jury. Like, she had no ability to even put on a nice face to like try to get my vote. Which chances are she probably wasn't going to get anyhow, but yeah. I mean, Parvati proved the next time around that my vote was up for grabs. You know, I went in leaning towards the other way, and the way that she performed in front of the jury did sway my vote.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about fans versus favorites. That was the first fans versus favorites season, right? Or no?
Yes, okay. It was.
It was the first one.
The original.
The original one. You were part of the, favorites tribe, obviously, because you had played before. The biggest thing you were known for that season was it's just a fucking stick, because once the merge happened, it was right when the merge happened, right? It was the first tribal council after the merge. Jason Siska,
it sure was,
gave you what he thought was an immunity idol, but it was a fake one that Ozzy had planted. You got it, and this was back in the day when I don't even know if this was this one of the first times that fake idols became a thing, or were they way before this?
There was a previous fake idol, uh-huh. But we didn't know that, I think, because I think it was like on China where like Jamie played a fake idol. That was the first fake idol ever played. Mm-hmm. But that episode hadn't aired when we left, because we left halfway through the season.
Ah, okay.
And so in my mind, I was the first person to play a fake idol. But in fact, I wasn't.
And it wasn't a fake idol. It was just a fucking stick. Just like
right,
you
of course,
told Jason,
of course.
You looked
I
at this thing.
Yeah.
And so you end up getting voted out of that one. And it became, you were the first member of the jury on Fans versus Favorites, and we got to, well, you know what? Actually, let me back up real quick. Just talking about idols in general, this comes to what has happened to the show since then and what we're currently dealing with idols. Do you like the fact that there are so many idols available every season now, or no?
No, I hate it. I think I kind of think it's like ruining the game. Like, I understand that the game has evolved and whatever, but, you know, it kind of, it doesn't give people the ability to play, and it really gives people the ability to, I mean, this sounds terrible. And like, honestly, both my seasons, I don't think there was production interference, at least not in a major way. You know, I can point to a few small things, but like for the most part, they kind of let us play the game. But I think in the last, you know, I guess, when was the last time? In the last 8 years since I last played, 9 years since I last played, mm-hmm. I think it's changed a lot. You know, I think that Jeff is an executive producer and some other things. I think that they think that they need certain people to stay in the game, whereas they never used to think that. They used to be like, okay, we're casting 16, 18, 20 people, all of whom, if they make it to the final two, can carry the show. It doesn't matter. We want every single person here is here because if they make it to the, even if they're a person who we think is going to go out first, second, third, like if they make it to the end, that's great. We love them because that's why we're casting them. And now I think they cast so many people as like fodder, yeah. And they cast certain people who they want, expect, and hope will make it to the end. And they feel that they need that to keep the show going. And so like things I've been told, which, you know, didn't really, there was only like, there weren't that many idols on my season. It was different. They weren't buried at camp. But like, if you go out walking and the camera's all of a sudden like panning to the left and zooming in and you're like, oh, what's over there to the left and up there? And you like look up and there's the idol, and they're like kind of, you know, I think not like manipulating, but like, yeah, in a way manipulating the game to the point where like, I think if I ever went back on the show, I would have to hope that there weren't people who were going to be, you know, super duper fan favorites on the show with me, because otherwise production would like potentially fuck me to get those people further in the game.
Yeah. And I think that it's a question that I was actually going to ask about. We as a viewer sitting at home are watching these people just wander out into this giant forest of wherever they are, and they just randomly find a clue or an idol. And it's just like, one, it didn't used to be like this. And two, how in the world would they even know what area they were in? And it's always been a question, and I get it from people a lot that ask me, is there producer manipulation, and do they do that to get people to find certain idols or want people? And I think the first one I remember this happening a lot to
was Russell.
And it just seemed like he found three idols, I believe, out of the blue. This guy just said, like, I'm going to go look for an idol, and he ends up finding him three different times. That just seemed a little bit. But before the season started, I remember specifically Jeff Probst said, we have this season going in. I forget what the name that his first season was, Amazon or whatever. I don't remember. I remember Jeff Probst that season, when he given a season preview, said, we have the number one villain in the history of this show. Now,
well, he was a massive villain.
But what, you know, kind of what you alluded to earlier, was he the number one villain because, yeah, he gave a lot of great sound bites, but was it because he was pushed along a little bit by the show? How does he find three random idols out of nowhere? That's kind of what you hinted towards. Like, you know, it just seems weird.
Yeah. I think when people ask about producer manipulation, though, they're thinking, I think that people think it's in a more overt sense than it is. Like, I think people think, like, we're fed off camera, or we have, you know, these luxuries, or we're sleeping in beds, like, when they're not looking, you know. No, like, it is, the show is 100% real, that I can tell you. Like, I mean, I lost, like, 20 pounds. I was fully starving. I was very, very sick afterwards. Like, that part is legit. It's completely real. It's insane. It's so hard. You know, we're sleeping out there. We're freezing cold. We're wet. We're miserable. Like, don't underestimate the misery. I actually think they don't show just how much we suffer, because I think it would, like, get boring, and they don't want – people don't want to just, like, watch suffering.
Yeah.
But that is – you know, that's not manipulated at all. But I think, like – and I don't think – I think people think, oh, maybe they just, like, hand someone an idol. You know, that's not it either. And they don't have us reshoot conversations. They're not telling us what to say or who to vote for. You know, it's really, like – much more subtle than that. And that's why when I even say this stuff about, like, turning the camera a certain direction and you just kind of have to look the direction the camera is going, like, that's pretty subtle manipulation. If you don't even know to look for it, you wouldn't even know, you know. It's like, so it's not, I don't think it's, like, overtly manipulated, but I do think that it has changed a bit.
No, I can see that. And when you talk about fans versus favorites, like we said, you got voted out first person at the merge, and that season got down to Parvati, and it was Amanda Kimmel, right?
Yes.
That was Amanda. And was that Amanda's second? That was her back-to-back season? That was the
second? Exactly.
Okay.
That was her second appearance.
And you had a vote to make. What did you, do another grandstand at the finale with your speech, your finale question?
I sure did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
You know, kind of, it's kind of the fun of it. It's like giving a closing argument. Like, you know, I'm not going to, like, sit there for all these weeks and then not give a big speech.
Yeah.
And so I told Parvati she was a mean girl, and I told Amanda that when she talked, she literally made me want to kill myself. I was like, if I had had to hear one more word about colonics or microdermabrasion, like, you know, it was just, I was mean. It was kind of mean.
And you ended up voting for Parvati, who won. And why did Parvati get your vote?
You know, she did a great job answering questions, taking ownership of the moves she made throughout the game, and, you know, even though she was the one who, like, got me, you know, because she and I had been together the whole time, like, I thought that she had earned my vote.
What is Amanda Kimmel up to now?
She, like, moved back to Montana. Is that where she's from? And had a baby.
Oh, okay. Oh, good for her. I want to get to survivor questions in general. These are the average questions, and I'm sure you've gotten these 1,000 times, but I know fans out there who are religious watchers to the show still have a hard time believing certain things when it comes to this show. So the first thing that people talk about is the food portioning. Like you mentioned, people seem to think you guys are snuck food off camera, or you eat more than what they show. Explain the food rationing out there.
I think we eat less than people think we eat. I mean, I think I was eating, like, maybe a few hundred calories a day, like, if that, on a good day. Because I think that on some other seasons where they've gotten more food, you know, I hate when people call it White Rice Wednesdays. Like, that's a new thing that started back in Blood versus Water. That was, like, Reed and Josh's season. And they started calling it White Rice Wednesday. And I was like, no. Survivor, like, typically we never got rice on Survivor. Like, that started on a season where, you know, there was no food available. Like, it was maybe, like, you know, some jungle season, you know, whatever. But on these island seasons, we had the access to coconuts, and in Vanuatu, we would dig up what's called manioc. It's like a root vegetable, like almost like a potato is the closest thing I could compare it to. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really taste like a potato. Anyhow, so we would like have coconuts and manioc, and we would catch crabs and eat hermit crabs, which like aren't meant to be eaten. They're really disgusting. Or we would like go out into the water and just like pull snails off a rock and just boil them in water and just crack them with a rock and eat them. They were slimy and disgusting. We would eat giant clams, you know, whatever we could collect. But like, it was not much food, and we certainly didn't have any like rationing. Like, we didn't get rice on either of my seasons. So there was none of that.
What about the gross food challenges? That used to be prevalent on this show at least one episode a season. That was a thing where you'd have the, you know, you'd have to eat bugs or whatever. They rarely do that anymore. Do you like the fact that they took that away, or are you fine with it?
I like that they took it away. I've never been I hate vomit. It's disgusting. I can't deal with it.
Too many people were getting sick because of it or.
Yeah. I don't know. I think gagging. They had some really gross ones, but I didn't have one on either of my seasons. So I never participated in a gross food challenge. And, you know, I think it was like, they were like, well, it was back in the days of Fear Factor. And they were like, well, we're never going to compete with Fear Factor. So maybe we should just stop trying. Because this isn't really like our wheelhouse.
Yeah. The other thing was shelter. Some shelters that people build and tribes build, some are good, some are not so good. Is there really any shelter that any tribe can build out there that would completely protect you from the elements? There really isn't one, is there?
No. Nothing we could build. We slept in a cave.
Yeah.
In Micronesia. And so that was fantastic. The cave was awesome.
Wow. But I look at those shelters and I'm like, my gosh. There's that. And then the next one was the bug bites and infections. You can't go on Survivor and not get, and we're not talking about 10 or 15 bug bites. We're talking about
hundreds.
A whole body full of
all
bug bites.
All over your body. Oh yeah.
So how is that not something that turns into a possible infection? Are you guys looked at constantly?
Oh, people did have infections. The flies would be like, ew, one of like Sarge and Chris, the guys had such gross ones that looked like they were like these gaping wounds. And it used to be this Australian doctor, Dr. Ado, back in the day. And he'd be like, they'd be like, I think there's like pus oozing out of it. He'd be like, it's just protein. It's fine. Don't worry. It's protein. And like literally – the flies would like swarm around and like land on people's open wounds. It was so disgusting. Really disgusting.
And is there anything, again, people think like, oh, you must be given medicine if something like that happens or develops or they see something like, but no, you're not given anything?
No. Well, at least back then we weren't. You know, the rules have changed a lot. I don't know why or how, but I think it's because of so many, you know, they've had to like medevac people out for very serious infections. And and so that now I think they actually do like a little bit more of the treatment. I mean, the doctors would look at us. We'd get looked at like every other day or almost at least two out of every 3 days, because every challenge and every tribal council, we got to see medical.
I get one mosquito bite on my leg that I scratch incessantly, and I'm a miserable human being. It's why I could never do Survivor. As much as I love that show, I have zero interest in ever going on it. Ever. I'm like Suri. And Suri ended up doing it. But her big claim
Three
to fame
times.
Is like, yeah.
Four times. How many times has Suri been on?
Four times. Yeah. Like her biggest claim to fame was like, oh, I'm just that woman that sat back and watched it, but I put myself out there. I'm like, great, Suri. I'm the exact same person, but I'm not putting myself out there. I don't want to get eaten.
It's rough. I'm not going to lie. It's rough. When I was out there the second time, I was like, oh my God. Because you know what they say? It's kind of like how people can go through childbirth a second time.
Yeah.
That you actually, despite remembering that you were in pain, it's impossible to recall pain that you felt. Like, try to think of a time when you were in really, really intense pain.
Yeah.
You can think back and be like, oh, I remember I was in so much pain. Like, it hurt so much. But you can't actually physically conjure the pain that you felt.
Yeah.
And so that enables your body to like continue to do things like have another child or whatever. You know, it's like an evolutionary thing. It probably protects us in some way. But when I went back on Survivor the second time, I was like, oh my God, I knew how bad this was. I cannot believe I fucking did this to myself. Like, this is so awful. Like, what the fuck was I thinking? And I'm just like miserable and it's raining and I'm sick. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did this again. Like, it really, you're able to forget the pain of it, but it is so miserable.
Yeah, and some people that we see on the show, and one that comes to mind was Russell, how it was such a mind over matter thing where Russell just didn't seem to let the elements phase him at all. And he was going through the same exact elements that everyone else out there was as well, yet they were all miserable. And he was just like, well, whatever, I'm going to be up at 5 a.m. doing this and doing that. And I've never been in a situation where it was something of a mind over matter thing like that. And I guess it's hard to, unless you've been through it, it might be just kind of hard to explain. And I think another thing that comes up a lot that I've heard and I've always been curious about, especially on the women's side, is the personal grooming situation. Now, some people don't understand how the women out there don't, well, you know, basically turn into hairy beasts without any sort of razor kits. Yeah, razor kits or whatnot. Explain, are you given anything or you just get it taken care of before you get out there?
We're given nothing. We don't have toilet paper. We don't have toothbrushes. We don't have razors. We don't have hairbrushes. We have nothing, truly. We do have tampons in a med box, like off camera.
They do give you those. I didn't even know you got those. Okay.
We do get tampons, but you know, so I got all of the hair on my body lasered off before I went on Survivor, but some people don't. And some people do get really hairy out there. It's gross.
Yeah. Okay. Camp life. What do people keep themselves from just not pulling their hair out on a day when there isn't a challenge or isn't tribal council? I mean, what do you do?
I know, right? The boredom. They also really don't show us being bored or exhausted or, you know, just sitting around or having stupid conversations about like recipes, because all we think about is food because you're starving. Or we're like, you know, one of the things, we played charades. Like, I split everyone into teams. I was like, all right, we're having charades by the fire tonight. And we like played like 2 hours of charades where I like gave everyone, like I was like the host and I like split everyone. And then I was like, okay. And I would give the person the thing because somebody has to make it up. And then they would act it out and everybody would guess. And it was like, you know, they didn't show any of that. Like, it wouldn't have been fun to watch, but like, that's how we entertain ourselves. Like, people made up games. And
And the way it's filmed is like one episode covers what, a 3-day span roughly?
Usually it's about 3 days. So they have like hundreds of hours of footage for every 42-minute episode with commercials. You know, it's like, it's crazy.
Which is basically, I mean, essentially, it's what The Bachelor is. The Bachelor is 4 days of filming. It's 3 dates and a rose ceremony. That's one episode. And then they're just on to the next episode. So that's, you know, 96 hours of footage condensed into, you know, The Bachelor's.
But it's way more than 96 hours, because if you think about how many cameras they have rolling on how many different people, and
exactly,
you know, that's the same as us, like different camps and different things and how many different camera angles they have for challenges. And then they have to, you know, do all, it's crazy.
Yeah. And Survivor's a 1 hour episode. So 42 minutes with commercials, and
exactly.
And Bachelor's 2 hours. So it's, you know, an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and 24 minutes, whatever you want to say. But yeah, it's a crazy thing to think of, but yeah, they're not going to show them playing charades unless it has to do with somebody's storyline.
With the ultimate outcome, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Tribal Council, obviously we know, and maybe people don't know this, Tribal Council takes hours, and we see 15 minutes of it.
For sure.
And we're talking, do you remember the longest Tribal Council? I mean, obviously you don't have a clock out there or a watch, but do you remember the longest Tribal Council you were ever in?
No, I don't remember. I wish I did. I wish I could remember. Like, I know there were some really long ones because they would change tape. Like, they'd be like, all right, change tape. And then we would just like have a break. And I think like once we had two tape changes, which means like it went into 3 hours or more. I don't even know.
Wow. I mean, that is just.
And it's so uncomfortable. The thing you don't realize, like, you know what we take for granted in everyday life? Like, you just, take so for granted, like that you have a comfortable place to put your butt.
Oh yeah.
Like just you're on Survivor there. You are never, ever, ever, ever comfortable. Like your butt is uncomfortable all the time. So like at tribal council, you're sitting on those stumps and it's so uncomfortable. You know, you're like at camp, it's not comfortable. Like it's, you're never, ever physically comfortable.
And I think that that's something that, like you said, we take for granted. And for me, you know, I talked about the bugs before, but I've said this to a couple of my friends who talk about Survivor. I'm like, look, I don't even want to sleep outside. And I like, if I go outside tonight, instead of going into my room at bedtime and sleeping in my bed, just go put a blanket down and go lay on the grass in my backyard, which might even be somewhat comfortable, more comfortable than anything on Survivor. I have zero interest in doing that. And yet I'm going to have to expect to do that for 39 days. Like, no, thanks. I'd rather sleep on a cushion in a shelter. Sorry. Like that's just me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
this show has people that obviously would love to play it and would kill to play this game. And I think it's fascinating. It really is, because I could never do it. I know I could never do it. And but I'll watch every freaking episode and I'll dissect it as much as I can. So, I've got a couple personal things about you that I found when I was Googling, and these were interesting. These are things I did not know about you. Number one, I did not know that you were the first person to do a Ponderosa video.
Yes, Ponderosa started with me.
With you, when you got voted out on Fans versus Favorites. That's where, for those that don't know and don't follow the show off camera on Wednesday nights, when after you're done watching the episode, they show the Ponderosa video of the person that gets eliminated, everything of when they got back to camp, what they ate. Usually they're getting to the room, and then obviously you were the first person there, so then the other people's Ponderosas, you're meeting them or whatever. But
exactly.
When you got to Ponderosa, do you remember what your video was, what you did, what you said on yours, or were you just like...
I remember that I weighed in and I ate. I think I was eating, like, you know, I ate the same thing right after I got voted off both times. Like, it was kind of like in honor of Amy. She had given me peanut butter with chocolate drizzled on it. So I like went into the food and I was like, all right, peanut butter with chocolate drizzled on it in honor of Amy, and like ate that. I can't really remember. This is a really long time ago.
Yeah, it was.
And I don't think I've rewatched it back like in a long time.
8 or 9 years ago. Yeah. You were also the first female contestant to win a car challenge, which is crazy.
So funny.
What'd you do with your car? What happened?
I never drove it out of the lot. GM was a sponsor, so CBS had to cut a check to them. And then I sold it back to that. Like, I couldn't. I mean, I had no use for a vehicle.
Yeah. And this was added to the thing that I read. Not only were you the first female contestant to win a car, which they don't even do anymore. That's kind of weird. Yeah, they don't even do the car challenges anymore.
They lost their sponsorship.
Yeah, you were the first victim of the car curse. Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't the first victim of the car curse.
Oh, okay.
Everyone was. The car curse. No. The car curse was like a thing, and that was, everyone was the victim of the car curse.
That's right, because nobody that won the car ever won the show.
Nobody who won the car won the show. That happened, like, that's why the car curse was a thing.
Yeah.
Because every single person who won a car on Survivor then lost the show. Not one person won.
And that's probably why they haven't done it in so long, because it was almost like giving away that, okay, well, this person definitely isn't going to win.
Well, you know, who knows if it could have been broken if it kept going. It was like, it's, I don't know that it was cause and effect.
I didn't know this about you, and I want to know what the story is. In May of 2015, you went on the Dr. Oz show with your dog, Oscar. What was that for?
So amazingly, that story is very funny. So Sophie Clark, who was
she was a winner, right?
Survivor winner, exactly.
Yeah.
So Sophie was working for Dr. Oz. She had an internship for Dr. Oz. I think it was subsequent to Survivor South Pacific after she won, because she was in medical school and she was interning for Dr. Oz, and she basically, the bookers were looking, they were like, oh my God, we have this segment and we don't have enough people and dogs. And they were like, Sophie was like, what? And they're like, we're doing a segment on like dangerous dog food. And like, we need more, we need like another pair of like camera friendly dog and human combo. And they filmed like on the Upper West Side. So they're in New York. And Sophie called me and was like, hey, quick question. Are you and Oscar free this afternoon? And I was like, but maybe she told me like a day in advance or 2 days in advance. And she was like, I was like, what do you mean? Are we free? She's like, are you guys free? Can you film the Dr. Oz show later this week? And I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. So Oscar and I ended up on the Dr. Oz show thanks to Sophie.
But what was the, like, what did you do? What was the thing?
Nothing. I was just like, they just wanted a human to be there. Like this, you know, they had a vet on the show and then I was the human with my dog. And I was like, Dr. Oz, Oscar's my baby and I care so much about him and I want to make sure I'm doing all the right things. So he's well taken care of. Like, what should I be feeding him or like whatever?
Oh,
and he's
okay.
Like,
okay, so
it wasn't like I had like some major role on the show.
Okay, so okay, but the fact that you went on Dr. Oz with Oscars, that's pretty cool. Like,
yeah,
I had no idea. I read that about you. I was like, oh, I didn't know she did that.
That is true. That is a thing we did. I forgot about that.
Okay, word association
Oscar
time.
Oscar was the star.
Yeah, no kidding. Word association time. I'm going to give you a name of somebody from this franchise, and you give me the first thing that pops into your head about
okay.
this person. All right, here we go. Richard Hatch.
Oh, God. I don't know. He was like the naked alliance maker.
Russell.
Russell. Sneaky troll.
Johnny Fairplay.
Fairplay. Like biggest liar of all time.
Ceri.
Ceri. Lovable mom and most robbed contestant ever.
Ozzy.
Ozzy. He's just the ultimate jungle boy.
Parvati.
Parvati is Queen Bee.
Jeff Probst.
Queen Pee, I should say. Queen
oh,
Pee.
Queen Pee. Ah, I got it. Probst.
Probst. I don't know. Like the what's the person who runs the circus called? The ringmaster?
Ringleader?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a name that I hadn't thought of in a long time, but Yao Man.
Oh, Yao Man, he's such a love.
Yao Man.
Yeah. Yao Man is like the brilliant scientist.
Colby
is dumb Mr. America or like dumb Captain America. I don't know. Like, you know, so all American, but really blew that for himself.
And then the last one, Boston Rob.
Boston Rob is like the biggest teacher's pet of Survivor in the history of Survivor.
Oh, okay. So I end every interview with a final 10 question. Some are personal, some are show related, but
okay.
I know that you'll answer anything. So here we go.
Sure. Go for it.
Question number one.
Okay. what are we going to get?
All right. Question number one. Have you ever hooked up with someone from Bachelor Nation?
Oh my God. Yes.
Okay. I think I knew the answer to that, but I wanted to make sure that you answered it. You don't have to name names.
Thank you.
Question number two. Obviously, you travel a lot. You've been to many countries. We talked about this earlier. You've been to so many. Do you have a favorite country?
Oh, my God. That's so hard.
Do a top three. Try and narrow it down to let's do top
okay,
three.
I'll do favorites in, like, different categories. Like, I'll say favorite like warm weather country maybe, or like place that I would like love to move to would be like, I would move to Sydney, Australia in like a heartbeat. Like mm-hmm. I loved it. I loved the vibe there. I loved Australia. It's amazing. So I'll say Australia is that one. I would say like most exotic, most interesting, like a place that if someone's like, okay, what's like a super cool trip I should plan? Like, where should I go? I tell them to like go to Myanmar, formerly Burma. It's unbelievable. It's so unspoiled. It's like recently, you know, at least when I went, it was recently open to tourism. So, you know, it was very, just so interesting and cool. And the people are so kind and warm and welcoming. And I just absolutely fell in love with it.
What about best place for, I don't know, like sightseeing or historical perspective? Landmarks, I guess, stuff like that. What would be the best place? Your top place?
Oh my God. I mean, I feel like I have like so many places checked off, but like in terms of like big things that you go see, but I think that, it sounds cliche because people are like, oh, well, sure, you know, but the Great Wall is, it will not underwhelm you. Like if you go there, you will be like, oh my God, like you're blown away by it. It just is as far as the eye can see in both directions. Like it's the Great Wall. Wow. And sure, it's called the Great Wall. So you're like, what? I don't know. But every time a friend came to visit me in China when I was living there, I would take them to this area of the Great Wall where there were no people. And it's kind of like you could just walk through someone's farm and like go up there. And it helps if you speak Chinese because then you know how to get there and direct a driver to get there and everything. But I would take friends there and they were like, oh my God, like this is the Great Wall. Like, yeah, I expected it to be, but like, it's just, it's mind blowing. And it's so crazy when you think about how old it is and how it was built and when it was built. And especially when you're the only ones there, like go look at like Franny's pictures. She's like doing headstands on the Great Wall. And, you know, I've like had lots of friends come visit me there. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, question number three. Discounting any season that you were on, so Vanuatu and Fans vs. Favorites is out, what has been your all-time favorite season of Survivor?
Oh, I think I would have to say, I mean, I love the original just because it's like the original, but in retrospect, like watching it back, I don't think it actually holds up strategically or like it doesn't bring me as much joy as Heroes versus Villains. Oh my God, Heroes versus Villains is just so high up there on like just the entertainment level of like every tribal council and such. I'm a huge fan of everyone who was on that season and I really wanted to be on that season, but yes, I loved Heroes Villains.
Okay. See, like I said at the beginning or earlier in the podcast, I've seen every episode of every season yet. I could not, once you tell me, I'll be like, oh yeah. But off the top of my head, I have no idea who won season Heroes versus Villains. Was that the Boston Rob and Amber one or no? Am I missing?
No. Okay. Boo.
All right. So, okay. Who's Heroes versus Villains? I'm totally drawing a blank.
Heroes versus Villains. Well, that was Sandra's second win, but it was Sandra, Parvati, and Russell in the finals. And that was when like, when JT like gave Russell his idol
to, yeah,
like, to like get to save Russell. And then they ended up voting him out with his own idol. And Tyson blew up that season. And Danielle and Amanda are like fighting like on that reward over like the clue for the idol, and Parvati pulls out two idols and saves Jerry and Sandra when they're trying to vote her out, and then the villains take the advantage, and you know, there are just so many awesome people on that season, and Courtney, and I don't know.
Okay, so Heroes versus Villains was Sandra's season's second win. That was interesting because I do remember that one, now that you mention it, because you mentioned the final three of that season, was the fact that was Russell's back-to-back season, but nobody on that season knew what he had done in the previous season, and if they did, he never would have lasted as far as he did, I don't think.
Because
when he showed up on the show a third time, the one where he went on with Boston Rob, everyone was gunning for him because they had seen him twice and they knew his game.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a good season. Okay.
It was a really good season.
I just forgot who won it. All right, question number four. Who's your favorite winner in the history of this show?
Parvati.
Least favorite?
It's a toss up.
Okay.
It's either Cochran or Sarah Lacina.
Really? Why not? Why did you not like them winning?
I just don't like either of them.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. So it had nothing to do with gameplay or whatever. This is more of a personal thing against them. Just don't like them.
I don't like them. I didn't think that. I thought like, both those seasons, like they shouldn't have won. And yeah, I don't respect them.
Okay. Question number five. If there was another, well, you probably just answer it, but I was going to say, if there's another season you could have been on, which one would it have been?
Oh yeah, heroes, villains. Heroes for sure. Villains.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Would you have been a hero or would you be considered a villain?
Well, this season with heroes, hustlers, and healers, someone was like, oh, because you're a public defender and you're like out there, you know, maybe you would have been a hero, like profession-wise. But I think survivor-wise, probably they would have put me on the villains.
Yeah.
And all the cool kids were on the villains anyhow. I would have wanted to be a villain.
Question number six. Is there a twist that this show has never done that you think might work? Or what about it? Whether it's a tweak to something that they currently do, or on the flip side, what's one thing you absolutely cannot stand that they're doing? So first one, twist that they've never done, because they seem to add a new twist every season, whether it's Exile Island or Redemption Island or Power, what the One World thing, whatever it was, the medallion, the power medallion or whatever the hell.
Oh, that was so stupid.
Yeah. Is there a twist? Have you ever thought about, you know what, if they did this twist, I think this would be really good.
Oh my God, that's so hard to come up with a new twist on the spot. Yeah. I feel like that's like...
Well, I was only saying it because maybe when you've been watching it or you've talked about it with friends where you guys have been like, why haven't they ever done this? That's kind of my thing. But if you've never talked about it, then yeah, it would be kind of hard to come up with on the spot. I don't think
I have a good answer for that. I'll pass. Let me pass and come back to it. Let me think about it.
Okay. On the flip side, one thing you can't stand that's either become prevalent in recent seasons or something that that's always bugged you about some format of the show.
I mean, I just hate how many advantages and idols, and there are like a million things in play, and that's what led to the tribal council last season where Ceree was the only person not immune at tribal, and yeah. That was like such bullshit. She was completely robbed again, and I like was furious about that. I mean, it's just like, enough, guys. I understand you want there to be twists, you want there to be, you know, all this stuff, but like, it's enough. Like, just back it off.
In thinking about it and going back to the first season and probably the first few seasons, obviously we know there weren't a ton of idols in play. Was it literally just one idol a season back then? Or was it, once it was used, did they put another one back in play? Or was it just one? It was just one back then, right? Like, they didn't do multiple.
Right. There were never a million idols floating. Well, first of all, the first time I played, there were no idols.
There weren't even idols on Vanuatu?
None. Zero.
So for the first 9 seasons, they never hid idols? I don't even remember that. See, I don't even remember that. That's crazy. Okay. Now they're hiding them at challenges. I think that,
right.
That was a tweak that they added that I actually liked. I liked the fact that they did that at challenges. I thought that was interesting. It was because it was something different. And it was just like, wow, well, you can, yeah. If you can go steal it when nobody's seeing you.
You can thank Entertainment Weekly's Dalton Ross for that.
Yes, that's right. He was the one that actually, I remember.
He was like, hide him at challenges.
And then there it was.
And he convinced them to do it. Yeah.
Okay, question number 7. What's the last TV show that you binge watched?
I've been rewatching West Wing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I love Aaron Sorkin. I love the West Wing. The current political climate has been like super depressing to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just like indulging myself, and I've been rewatching all of West Wing.
How many seasons of West Wing were there?
7, I want to say. Is that okay. Right?
I don't know. I never watched West Wing.
Oh my God, you never watched
no,
it?
No, I never got into it.
I'm so jealous. That means you can start from the beginning. You've never seen it. You get to enjoy it for the first time. You have to watch. It's amazing.
Maybe.
I highly recommend it. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. It's brilliant. It's just, it's like poetry.
What's currently can't miss shows on your DVR right now?
Oh my God. I can't even tell you. You're going to like Rachel Maddow's DVRing right now. Like, that's my 9 PM show is I watch Rachel. Like you're going to kill me.
I meant I don't have anything
interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything non-political on? I'm talking about like whether it's, you know, something on HBO or something on, like,
I watch The Voice.
Okay.
I watch The Voice. I watch Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Okay. I watch Survivor.
Are you a Big Brother person?
No, I quit Big Brother. It got too annoying and too time consuming.
Yeah.
But I'll watch. There's like a 3-week season coming up, which is going to be like celebrity one, like in the off season, like in January. So I'll watch that.
Yeah.
And I stopped watching Amazing Race. I basically have stopped watching most things.
Okay. I know that you, question number 8 is, I know you would go back on Survivor.
I obviously watch all the Bachelor shows. They're just not on right now.
Oh yeah. That's right. You are a big Bachelor fan.
Yes.
I know you would go back on Survivor in a heartbeat. If that were to never happen again, what's the one reality show that you would do?
What's the one?
Is there a reality show that you would be interested in doing?
I mean, not really. I guess I would do The Amazing Race, but like The Amazing Race sucks now. And it's all just like, you're just bunched. Like, they just bunch people back together and like nobody actually, like you can't actually get ahead. And I probably would irreparably ruin my relationship with anyone who I ran the race with. And, I don't know.
I was going to say that was the one I would think for you, just because you travel so much.
I travel a ton. Like, it would be fine, but I think it would be pretty miserable, and I certainly wouldn't want to go on a dating show. And I have no talent.
You have the gift of gab. That's what you have. That's your talent.
Right.
So it's got to be something where, ooh, you know what you would have been good on?
What?
Well, I shouldn't even... Knowing the political climate, you know what I'm going to say. Celebrity Apprentice. Obviously now with what we know now and whatnot. No. But yeah. But just the idea of that show. Let's just say there was a different host of that show. Hey, like when Arnold did it.
Martha did it.
When Martha did it. When Bethany Frankel finished second. Look what happened to her career after that.
I know.
Okay, question number 9. This one's going to have, you're going to put your thinking cap on, or maybe you know this right off the top of your head, you've already got one in your head. Taking everything into account, gameplay, social game, overall wins, challenge wins, however your criteria is, who do you think is the greatest player in the history of Survivor? It's very subjective, because there is no right answer, really, because I could ask 10 people this question, probably get 10 different answers, but
right.
In your opinion.
Interesting. Okay. So I think that, you know, people would argue Sandra, she's the only person who's won twice.
Yeah.
And she definitely is a phenomenal player. I actually think, you know, Ceri is way up there because, but for them making it a final 2 versus a final 3 in Micronesia, Ceri would have been the winner. But for her dropping that ball in that last challenge against Parvati and Amanda, against Amanda, actually, she was in the top 2, like Amanda beat her. If she had won that challenge, she would have won the season. And but for the craziness with her being the only person not immune, she was certainly on track to like come close to winning that season. You know, I think she's certainly one of the greatest players ever. You know, I guess some people would say Boston Rob, but like he made it to the final 2 and then he won a season that was like handed to him on a silver platter. I don't think he even cracks the top 10 for best players.
Whoa, not even top 10?
No, not even top 10. I think
really?
Parv is way up there. She's a finalist and a winner.
Yeah. Definitely. She's definitely.
I actually think Russell was great. He, you know, making it to the final 2 back-to-back seasons, but he lacked the social game.
Yeah.
It's
a really tough question because everyone's got their different criteria of what they think is. Is it based on, you know, if we're going strictly off wins, then yes, the answer is Sandra, and there's no disputing because nobody else has won 2. But
right.
I don't think she's the greatest player to ever play this game. I think for me, my personal thing is everything I just listed, somebody that's good at gameplay, has a social game. I wouldn't even necessarily count somebody that won. It certainly helps, but someone that was, you know, good in challenge wins, won individual challenges, was a beast in challenges.
But winning, I think, being helps. A beast in challenges doesn't necessarily make you a great player. Sometimes it makes you too big of a threat and it gets you voted out. And it, I don't know. I think there are like arguments to be made on both sides of that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that makes you.
I think Parvati is in my top two. She might be the best that's ever played because of everything that she was able to accomplish and basically her resume.
Have you ever met her in person?
No, never met Parvati.
Parvati has this quality that not many people, I think, even in the world I've ever met have this. Like, it's like this charisma. It's because it's not just flirtation. Like, she's great with men, certainly, yeah, but she does it with women too. She's got this charisma. She just draws you in. She sucks you in, and people just like fall under her spell, like in 2 seconds. Like, people love her. People just fall in love with her, like fall over. Like, she can have people wrapped around her finger in 2 seconds. Like, she is like really good at it, and it makes her great at Survivor.
And she's always, and when we saw her on the show, she was always smiling, always seemed to be happy
laughing,
and she's attractive. So obviously that got every guy under her finger, wrapped around her finger. It's just, she was, I've almost talked myself into Parvati being, in my eyes, the best player who's ever played this game because of her resume. How many times did she play? Three, or you only played those 2 times?
Three times.
What were her places? Winner, finalist, and what was the other one?
Like seventh.
And which season
her
was that?
Her first time playing with Candace and Penner and everybody, she was seventh. That was in Cook Islands.
Yeah, see, I mean, I watched it, but I couldn't remember one thing. But yeah, 3 plays, a win. She was good. She wasn't, when I say good at challenges, like a beast at challenges, not necessarily like won all the time, but somebody that never won anything, but then got... That's why I have a problem saying Sandra's the best ever. I understand that she won twice, but in those 2 wins, I could be wrong, but did she ever win individual immunity? Maybe once?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't... Nothing's... To me...
It almost makes it more impressive that she was able to win twice with no individual immunity wins, though, right?
Yeah, now there's an argument to be made for that. Like, seriously, there could be an argument to be made for that. It just... When I look at Survivor, I look at people that made moves, were good, and like had it all. And she seemed to be lacking in certain areas, but she does have 2 wins. So yeah, you can't argue with 2 wins. It's almost like, and you'll like this because, ooh, I'm going to bring this up right now because this has nothing to do with Survivor. This is totally off record, not off record.
I know, I was like, oh, this is off the record.
Totally something not to do with, but I was just having a conversation with this about somebody today, and we were talking about Eli Manning, and I know you're a huge Giants fan. And my question to this person and just talking about it was, because I had heard this over the weekend and it didn't really register with me. And then I went and did, you know, more research on Eli. And it's just like, okay, Eli Manning is a 2-time Super Bowl champion. The 2 Super Bowls that he won were against the fucking New England Patriots and Tom Brady, which
sure
was just
thing.
Unbelievable.
Sure were. Another, one of the seasons they were undefeated.
One of the seasons, undefeated. The first one where they were 18-0.
18-1. And we beat them.
And they beat them. And then the second one, he beats them. Again, both times that the Giants won those Super Bowls, they did not have a first round bye, so they went 4-0 both years.
We were wild cards. Yep.
Wild cards. Both. Well, the first season you were a division champion, but you didn't. You had.
Oh right.
You didn't
right,
finish
but we
first
still
or second.
Play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Home
right.
Game. So taking out the 2 Super Bowl wins, which are obviously on a neutral field, the other 6 games, 5 of those games were on the road, and he went 5-0. So that's
right.
Amazing.
We were the Road Warriors.
However.
Would you call Eli the greatest quarterback of all time?
Exactly.
Of the current time? Would you rank him in the top 10 quarterbacks?
Here's the question I posed to my friend. If you voted today, is Eli Manning a Hall of Fame quarterback? And you're like, okay, there aren't many 2-time Super Bowl champions, I don't believe, that aren't in the Hall of Fame. However, I just read off all those accolades about Eli. However, in his other playoff... Eli's never won a playoff game outside of those 2. Like, the fact that he went 4-0 twice and beat the Patriots twice is unbelievable, yet he's never won a playoff game outside of the 2 Super Bowl 4-0 runs, which is amazing to me. And I heard that this week, and I was like, really? And I went and looked it up. Yeah, he was in the playoffs 4 other times and lost the first game both times. twice at home, twice on the road. And so when you look at it now, the numbers have stacked up. He's thrown for a shit ton of yards, but the last 4 or 5 years of his career haven't been great. A couple of years ago, he threw 27 interceptions. Like, I really don't know if Eli is a Hall of Fame quarterback, but yet what he did in those two Super Bowl runs is something that just is ridiculous and probably will never happen again. But
I completely agree with you. It's freaking crazy.
I totally forgot, or I guess I just never realized that he has never won a playoff game outside of those two Super Bowls, which was really weird. And I was like,
but those runs were like just the greatest thing ever.
Because they were all, I mean, like I said, 5 of the 6 games before the Super Bowl were all on the road, and both Super Bowls, he beat an 18-0 Patriots team, and he beat another Patriots team that I think had a 14-2 regular season or 13-3. The Giants were a 5 or 6 seed that, you know, just like, but you're like, how did Eli do that? And then how do you look at him now in the last 2 or 3 years and go, what happened to you? Like, what? It's crazy.
I know.
But yeah, that's being a Giants fan. Okay. Question number 10.
Tell me about it.
Final question. Question number 10 is what I reserve for something called Explain Your Tweet, where I go through your Twitter account. And Eliza, every single tweet you have you're more of retweeting. It's all political stuff. So I don't want to get into the political stuff, but here's something I didn't find, but for some reason I remember it on your Twitter account, and maybe I'm wrong. Did you actually?
I would like evidence if we're going to know. Anyhow, go ahead.
No, I think this is actually right. Did you win Hamilton tickets through a lottery one time?
Oh, yes, I did.
How the fuck did that happen? Like, isn't everyone trying to do that? And it happened to you.
So I'll tell you the story.
Yeah,
so it's
I
actually
this on
an
Twitter.
Amazing story.
Yeah.
This was, oh my gosh, it was January 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, like 2 years ago. And they were about to put the Hamilton lottery online. And I had gone. I actually tried to get tickets when it was at the Public before Hamilton even went to Broadway. I was obsessed with it for a very long time.
Okay.
And then after it closed down at the Public, I wasn't able to get tickets. Like right in the last few weeks was when I started trying. Lost the lottery there. Then it was closed for a while. They were preparing for their opening on Broadway. They opened on Broadway. I like would go up to Times Square to try to win tickets. I never won. But my strategy was, I had like a full-fledged strategy. I was like, I know. I'm going to start going on like really cold, miserable winter days so that, you know, other people will be deterred from going, because I didn't realize how huge it was going to get. Like I was like, so I'll go on those days and like only a few hundred people show up and I'll totally get picked. But anyhow, they were like, we're moving to an online lottery. And I was like, no, my strategy foiled. So when they, for the first day, they tried to go to an online lottery. Of course, I tried to log on with the rest of America, apparently. And that day, I don't know if you remember this, but they shut down, like they crashed the Hamilton website, the Lion King website, the Matilda website. It was like a bunch of sites all use the same lotto system. And Hamilton, because 50,000 people tried to log on that day, crashed everyone's sites. They had to leave the front row unoccupied because they were like, well, we can't give them away to somebody. We screwed this up. Like, it's not fair. So then they said, until we figure out our web presence, until we like really realize we obviously underestimated what the response was going to be like, they were like, we're going to go back to an in-person lottery. And I was like, all right, this was like January. It was like the first week in January. I was like, all right, well, it's now or never. Like, so I was like planning to go up there. But the problem is they do the lottery like 3 hours before the show. And except for on Wednesdays when they have a 2 p.m. matinee, so the show's at 8 p.m., the show is at 7 p.m. So they do the lottery at like 4 to 4:30. It's like way too early for me to get there from work because I'm down in court. I'm downtown.
Okay.
So on Wednesday, I was like, all right, this is it. This is my opportunity. I'm going to go. I'm going to do this. And I show up there. And I get in the line, and the line is just like curving around. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, how many people do you think are here? Anyhow, there were like 3,000 people up on.
Was it miserable weather at this one?
It was freezing.
Oh.
And so So the Richard Rodgers Theater is on 46th Street, and they had like cops and all these people, and the people were just filling the street, and cars were like honking, and they were like, sorry, you have to cross the street. Because on Wednesdays also, they did the Ham for Ham show. So people would show up because they would film it. It was like, you know, they would just do like a little performance for all the people who showed up for the live lottery. Mm-hmm. So I did this thing, which I kind of don't want to reveal my strategy because I'm worried that one day I'll be up against people in a thing, and I don't want everyone starting to use my strategy. But I did a certain thing to like try to make my paper like more like to stand out. And anyone who's a fan of Hamilton knows that the main characters are Alexander Hamilton and his wife Eliza, my name, and et cetera, et cetera. So anyhow, so that's just a preface because otherwise the story's not gonna make sense. So we're all standing there, and finally, like, they do the little performance. I'm getting so cold, like my toes are freezing. I'm like already looking at my phone. I'm like, all right, well, what, you know, once I lose this lottery, like, what am I gonna do? Am I gonna go to this like workout class? I was like looking at workouts, like what I was gonna sign up for that evening. And then they pull out the first name and they're like, oh my God, oh my God, we have an Alexander, blah, blah, blah. Like, come on down. And I was like, oh my God, that's so funny. That's so cute. Like Alexander, like Hamilton, like he gets picked. They pull out the next name and I'm standing like across the street. You know, there are cars like coming in between because the crowd is like, you know, so then they've had us go to the other side of the street. Oh, by the way, side note, the girl next to me in line was also there alone. And I said to her, I was like, hey, let's double our chances. Like, if you win, you take me. If I win, I'll take you. She was like, yeah, sure. Okay. And then they're like, and the second name, like the next name that we have is also important to our show. And I'm looking at the little piece of paper and I'm like, that kind of looks like my piece of paper. I'm like, this is nuts. Like, first of all, I'm like 50 feet away. I can't really tell if it's my piece of paper, but like my name is special to the show. And they're like, and it is Eliza Orleans. And I'm like, what? Oh my God. Oh my God. It was like, I won like the real lottery. And I'm like, so excited. I'm like, anyhow. And the crazy thing is, because they had just crashed all those websites and everything, all the newspapers were there. So a picture of me ended up in the Wall Street Journal with like other winners. Cause we're so excited. And they were like talking to us and they were like, oh, how does it feel? You know, cause we're now, like, no one ever wins because it's like this online lottery and it's impossible to win because so many people enroll. But anyhow, so I won the lottery. I sat front row center. I got little – it was original Broadway cast. Like, Lynn was, like, so close to me. Like, Jonathan Groff was, like, spitting on me. It was, like, one of the happiest nights ever. I came home. I, like, tweeted at every single cast member to, like, thank them. And I was, like – I was the girl bawling front row center. And Anthony Ramos, who played – who played Hamilton's son, he tweeted me back and he was like, you and the girl next to you, I brought the girl from the line.
I was going to say, like, did you bring her?
Ever. I should have like brought a friend or family member. But anyhow, I brought the girl. And so then he was like, you and the girl next to you looked like you were living your best life. Like front row center. Like we were like crying, having the best time. And it was amazing. And it's my favorite show.
How about that? I didn't want to scroll back 2 years on your Twitter feed to find it, but I knew that I had seen that on Twitter back in the day. I didn't know how far back it was, but
yeah, you would have had to really scroll for that one, especially given how much I tweet now.
There was I remember when I was going back, I was scrolling and I was scrolling and I was scrolling. I felt like I was scrolling for 5 minutes, and then I look at the date of the most recent tweet once I had reached that point, and it was like December. It was like December 6th. I'm like, okay, that was that was 5 days ago. I just scrolled for 5 minutes and I'm only gotten 5 days back. Like, all right. But no, that's a great story. I mean, I knew you had gone to it. Have you seen it since or no?
So I went in January. Then in May they released a block of tickets and I bought tickets for my whole family, dad, sisters, everybody, for my dad's birthday, which was January. So I saw it again a year later. But it took, cause I bought it in May for the following January, just to like, if you want to get tickets, that's like the lag time. And so I took my whole family in this past January. It was amazing. Yeah. Yep. So now I've seen it twice.
Wow.
I know. I want to go again and again and again. I love it so much.
Well, congratulations, Eliza. You have completed the final 10. You're welcome for not grilling you more about the Bachelor Nation hookups.
Oh yeah. No, I would have had to plead the fifth. I don't think I'm going to reveal that stuff. I think it's not fair to the other people.
But no, thank you so much for doing this. You're my first Survivor contestant that I've had on the podcast in a year. And I knew that you would have some good stories and you would be able to talk about everything that goes on that show as somebody who's competed on it twice and who is very, very in tune with the current seasons. And because you do the, you know, the roundup show that on People TV where we can watch you. Are you going to be doing any before the end of this season or no? There's only a couple episodes left.
So. Nope. There are only two episodes left, yeah. But I will.
Surely be back next season for Ghost Island, right?
I'm doing this thing that's called TV Party App where it's like a chat room.
Okay.
So I'm like in there live during the episodes. I don't live tweet them anymore. I just go in this app and like live chat the episodes. And so even if you're not on Eastern Standard Time, which is when we actually live chat in the app, you can like sync it with your TV and then see what I'm saying during the episode. So that's a lot of fun.
Are you talking the whole hour or is it just during commercial breaks you hop on the app? How does
the
it work?
Whole hour. I'm like, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, it's just like constant chatter. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, look for her there and look for her next season when Ghost Island premieres in February to go to People TV and look for her on the reality rundown show that goes on right at 9 o'clock Eastern time, right when the show ends. There's a panel of former Survivor contestants. It's hosted by Andrea Belke, right?
Exactly.
And she has people on and they talk about the show and Eliza has been part of it and she'll be part of it next year. But again, Eliza, thank you so much for doing this and for being a guest on podcast number 56 for me. Thank you for coming
on. Absolutely. Tell everyone to follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Everything is my first initial and my last name, E. Orlins, which is E-O-R-L-I-N-S.
Yes, that will be in Thursday's post. We'll have the links to all that. I'll probably go dig up your speech from Vanuatu.
Oh, my God. You have to post that with it. Yeah, exactly. It'll give people some context. They can watch me be like a real bitch.
Yeah, I'll embed that, and I'll have all your links to your social media on there as well so people can follow that. So, again, Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, thanks for having me. This was so much fun.
And I will talk to you soon.
Okay, talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you to Eliza for that. First Survivor contestant I've had on the podcast in 56 podcasts. She was great. I knew she would be because if you remember, you're going to watch the clip that I'm going to put in today's column. And you're going to see that she had one of the best tribal council speeches. She's also known for her expressions at tribal council, which I'm sure if you Googled Survivor Eliza expression or meme or something, that would definitely come up. But she had some good stories about that. So thank you to her again. Eliza has been a really good friend over the last few years. Really sweet girl, fun to hang out with. And I was glad I was able to get her on this podcast. So thank you again to all of you who listened. Please rate, subscribe, and review in Apple Podcasts. It would be much appreciated. And we will be back next week with podcast number 57. As you're listening to this, I'm probably either in LA or flying to California for the weekend. Got some stuff to do there. Have some podcast stuff to do there as well, which I'll fill you in on next week. So thank you all again for listening. Thank you again to Eliza for coming on. And that will do it for podcast number 56. Back next week. And we will talk to you then. See you.